Sittier from Sid and Friends in the Morning. If you own a business with at least 5 employees, visit governmentaid.com today. The federal government has enacted the Employee Retention Credit Program, known as ERC, setting aside billions of dollars to reward small businesses affected by the pandemic. You could be eligible for a payroll refund up to $26,000 per W-2 employee. This is your money, and you must act now to claim your refund. You can receive massive refunds even if you received PPP. This is not a loan, and you will receive cash refunds direct from the IRS. Visit governmentaid.com to consult with a dedicated ERC specialist that'll help you navigate through this complex process and file on your behalf. With no upfront fees, billions of refunds already filed, and thousands of satisfied customers, they have a team for you. Visit governmentaid.com to see if you qualify today. That's governmentaid.com.
Listen, all you New Yorkers.
You pay taxi.
Okay, we're looking around.
This is the 77 WABC minicast.
General Michael Flynn and I became friends via text, but it was almost a year and a half before we actually met. You see, we were both standing trial in the same D.C. federal courthouse. We were both subjects of a witch hunt, a bogus Fugazi prosecution designed to destroy us. Really wasn't us they were after. It was President Donald J. Trump. Now that I have gotten to know him, I can honestly say that General Michael Flynn is one of the greatest Americans it has ever been my privilege to know. He is not only an outspoken American patriot, but he is a geopolitical genius. And I predict to you, without fear of contradiction, that General Michael Flynn's greatest days of public service, in my opinion, lie ahead. General Flynn, thank you so much for coming on the Roger Stone Show.
Roger, thanks for having me. What an honor it is to be on what I believe as we go into 2024 with this presidential, the most consequential presidential election we are going to have in our nation's history, that this show, your show, is going to turn into the best political analysis that anybody can find, and I mean that. And I've been riding with you now for a few years, and boy, I'll tell you, your insights have just been so spot on. One of these days, too, I think, because I hear the name Fugazi all the time. Fugazi, right? Fugazi this, Fugazi that. I think that would be another. You probably ought to spend an hour show talking about Fugazi and who Fugazi is, what Fugazi means, and what does it mean for the country.
Well, for New Yorkers, of course, it means phony.
Exactly.
There's a lot of argument about the origins of that word. You're right. We could do an entire show on it, but we've got more important things to talk about today. Now, politics is always about the future, never about the past, but it's important to kind of walk through, at least quickly, the horrific persecution of you and your family. I myself have experienced this, but I've talked enough on this show about that. Let me kind of start here. You were present on January 6, 2017, at the Trump Tower meeting with President-elect Donald Trump, when CIA Director John Brennan, NSA Director Clapper, and FBI Director Comey briefed Trump on the, quote, intelligence that Russia had interfered in the election by stealing Democratic Party emails. Did you find that briefing convincing?
I did not find it convincing. And another person that was in that on that briefing, actually, I had set it up in Trump Tower, and I had coordinated because they had reached out to me as the incoming national security advisor. Jim Clapper actually personally reached out. I did not find that presentation convincing. Mike Rogers from the National Security Agency, Admiral Mike Rogers, was also there. He actually did the majority of the presenting. And I can tell you specifically, because I asked the question to make sure that President Trump understood, President-elect Trump at the time understood, that I asked the question, how confident are you in this information? And good for Mike Rogers, for Admiral Rogers. He described his level of confidence as being moderate, meaning, you know, that he wasn't convinced that the intelligence that they had was worth a damn, frankly. While the others, Brennan, Clapper, Comey. Now they, you know, you could tell they were squirming in their seats a little bit. And what was more interesting to me, and what we have learned since that famous presentation to Trump up in Trump Tower on the 6th of January of 2017, is the meeting that was held in the Oval Office the day prior. Okay, that's where very, very now famous meeting. We have all of the suspects. We have all of the. We have, 90% of the evidence that has already been exposed. And that meeting was with Obama, Biden, Comey, Clapper, Brennan, Susan Rice, Sally Yates, Deputy Attorney General. And the entirety of that meeting was to figure out how to get rid of General Michael Flynn, the guy that is speaking right now, which initially everybody that the reporting at the time, people were reporting on it as though, you know, they're having this meeting, and this meeting is about the presentation to Trump the next day. That was only part of what that meeting was about. The main effort for that meeting on the 5th of January 2017 was to figure out how do we get rid of General Michael Flynn? How do we remove him as fast as we can from a critical position as National Security Advisor? That we already know to be true. That has come out in not only the Durham report, but Durham's recent hearing, and much of the evidence that we were able to fight for and expose while I was fighting back, trying to get my case dismissed from a judge who was, became judge, jury, and executioner that exposed the corruption in our judiciary for the world to see. In the likes of Judge Sullivan back in my case. So that meeting on the 6th, it was initiated really prior, but principally by an Oval Office meeting on the 5th. And we now know the conspiracy, not conspiracy theory, Roger, the conspiracy to basically undermine a duly elected president of the United States, President Donald J. Trump, to undermine him at that time, and that's the dates, those are the critical dates that conspiracy came into fold here. One of the big, big disappointments for Durham, from my perspective, and this is where I think the House, if they have the guts to do it, but one of the things that Durham did not do, and it clearly came out during his hearing, was he did not bring in any of those characters that I just mentioned. He should have actually brought in Obama. He should have brought in Biden. He should have brought in Comey. McCabe is another one. Strzok is another one. Those are just other names that are part and parcel. Certainly Comey, Brennan, and Clapper. Yates would have been another. Rice would have been another under subpoena. And question them while he was doing his investigation, but he failed to do that. So to me, of all of the, there's some silver linings in the Durham report. There's some silver linings in the hearing, but I actually now believe that this to me is just a one massive cover up by the Department of Justice and John Durham. To me, based on my reading of what he was told to do by Bill Barr, the Attorney General, toward the third part of Trump's administration, John Durham failed his mission. He failed his mission to basically execute what he was directed to do. And he, by failing that mission, he is causing the American people to now have to drive ourselves, to drive at least the House of Representatives to at least initiate impeachment proceedings against President Biden. And I find it very, very difficult. I personally find it difficult to even say President Biden, but I'll give him that because of the madness that we experienced during 2020. But everybody knows that what we are, there's nobody wearing Build Back Better baseball hats, Roger. Okay, there's nobody out there, in the country that you see wearing that kind of cap on their head, touting the fact that they love this guy. I mean, no one. So we have, to me, this is my right to say it. We still have the First Amendment, the freedom of speech. I believe we have an illegitimate president in the White House. I believe that we have people, and and just look at what we know in terms of the alleged bribery scheme that he and Hunter are now a part of. And this is just so outrageous. It's so outrageous. So we must now, as Americans and as citizens, we now have to reflect on what is it that we can do, right? What can we do? Because we clearly see elected officials, particularly at the federal level, who a lot of them are listening to your show because they want the insights that you know, you as this political master, this political genius, you know, has. They want to know, what is it that the American people are upset about? Well, I can tell you, the American people are upset about a range of things. And I would tell you that we have two things that our founders gave us. One is courage. Our founders made the decision to demonstrate courage. But the second thing that our founders gave us and put it into the DNA of every American is something called accountability. And we must be held accountable. We hold ourselves accountable, and we have to hold those people who are elected officials accountable. And so now I'm pressing really on the House of Representatives because we still have a majority there. You must hold this White House. You must hold others in the previous administration to President Trump accountable. These people, they joined together prior to Trump taking office in 2017. They joined together to collude, conspire, whatever the legal word is, to undermine a duly elected president of the United States. And that still goes on. The cascading effect of what they started. And one of the things that we learned from Durham was in July of 2016. Actually, I think the exact date is 3 August 2016, where Barack Obama was briefed on the fake intelligence, the fake information that was promulgated by the Hillary Clinton campaign, by Hillary Clinton herself. He was briefed then, and then they all carried it. They all basically carried the message that it was all about Trump for the next 5 years. 6 years, we are still feeling the pain. And of course, my friend Donald J. Trump, he is also feeling the pain, him and his family. And that's one of the things that these people care less about. They care less about the families. They care less about my family. They care less about all the families that were affected by this. And the Trump family and President Trump, who's leading this nation in the polls right now, bar none, even on, you know, both sides of the aisle, they still attack him. And that's the cascade that began for me now. The timing for this cascade coming against the American people started when Barack Obama was briefed on this fake report from the Hillary Clinton campaign by John Brennan in the White House, 3 August 2016. And the people that were in that office at that time were the same suspects that were there on the 5th of January of 2017. So we're dealing with all of that, and we're yet, because I really do want to take a few minutes to just jump into the sort of the geopolitical landscape globally, because we're being led down a path where we have all these other emergencies around the world, these distractions, and I want people to understand that the crescendo of noise, this noise that is, that continues to uptick to a crescendo. That crescendo has not reached its zenith yet. It has not reached its you know, the moment of true crisis yet. But the stuff that's going on over in Ukraine, all this noise that just happened. I mean, the Wagner Group who just staged a mercenary group of people who just tried to stage a coup in Russia. You know, when we look at all of that, when we look at all the background of that, we had people in the mainstream media, Roger, championing the Wagner Group, which is a bunch of mercenaries who are only loyal to money. So whatever you think, what happened just in the last couple of days is an extension of this endless war where there are neocons and there are neolibs. There's people on both sides of the aisle who love war. We have got to stop the dying. And I think it's an NBC article where Joe Biden is talking about the use of nuclear weapons. I mean, so that's one aspect. And then we jump over to the other side of the world where we have China. China not just breathing down the throats of an independent Taiwan, But China is now, it appears now, is going to initiate a second Cuban Missile Crisis in Cuba again, okay, where China is now talking about not only doing intelligence collection capabilities from Cuba, but they're also talking about putting on the island of Cuba of what I would describe as offensive military capabilities. And I said a little bit tongue-in-cheek the other day, Roger, that China really doesn't even need to do all that because they've infiltrated the every reach of our government to include right inside the White House, right? I mean, the Chinese have us by you know what. And when this latest text by Hunter says it all, it says it all. But the Chinese are now going to do something that's kind of an in-our-face, and it's going to be on the island of Cuba. And then we're going to say, China, you know, we're going to beat our chest. You know, the Biden's going to beat his chest and say, we can't have China doing this. You're going to have the State Department saying things. And then China's going to turn right around and give us the big middle finger, and they're going to go, well, look, you guys are talking about use of nuclear weapons on the frontiers of Russia. China and Russia are great allies right now. They're probably the two leading allies. If we had to go into a war against another global alliance, the two leads in that global alliance would be China and Russia, and never mind a whole bunch of other nations that represent over 50% of the world's population. So we have a geostrategic map. And I haven't even mentioned the border. I haven't even mentioned the invasion of the border.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Folks, if you're just tuning in, this is The Roger Stone Show on WABC Radio. And I'm introducing General Michael Flynn, retired Lieutenant General, the 24th U.S. National Security Advisor for Donald Trump. And we're going to get into a lot of those geopolitical questions. Meaningful to me that when President-elect Donald Trump met with President Barack Obama, Obama's advice to him was, he said, Mr. Trump, you can appoint anybody you want to your cabinet, anybody you want to your government, but the one guy you should not appoint is General Michael T. Flynn. And thank God for the fact that Donald Trump had the courage to turn around immediately and appoint you as his national security advisor. I personally happen to believe that they conspired to fire you because they recognize your expertise in intelligence and that you would be the one guy who could see through the falseness of the entire Russian collusion hoax. Now, I know you have a lawsuit pending against all of these perps. It is extraordinarily difficult to sue the federal government. I think you have found a way to do that. But I don't want to talk about the past as much as I want justice for you and your family, just as I want justice in my own case. But let's get back to what happened yesterday in Russia, because many, many people are confused. There are some who speculated that this was a CIA-inspired operation to destabilize Putin. There are others who argued that this was staged by Putin for some internal political reason. The mainstream media, who are essentially cheerleaders for the corrupt Zelensky government, argue across the board that Putin is now weakened. What happened yesterday? Put this in terms that my listeners can understand.
Yeah, so first of all, the Wagner Group is a mercenary group. They actually operate not only in Ukraine and, of course, western part of Russia, but they also operate down in Africa. They operate down in Sudan. So the Wagner Group is one of these groups. It's a large group. They have the leadership that the Prigozhin guy that was just shown here over the last couple of days on TV and such. So it's a mercenary group. They work for money, period. The one thing that they failed, you know, and if you're looking because there's a failed coup. When you plan a coup, if you don't plan and if you don't plan to kill the king, you better not execute the coup. Okay? And so, what this did, this is going to strengthen Putin. Okay? Because remember what I just said, Wagner is a mercenary group. They work for money. They don't work for the loyalty of nations, not love of country, where Putin came out, made a statement, and it was all about love of country, and we're not going to allow this. And essentially what happened was the hierarchy in the military, in the security state, and I do think that one of the things that Putin was really smart about, and he's probably working these next couple of days to do it, is he's going to flush out those that were on the side of these mercenaries. So there'll be some of that coming to Jesus for those people that were behind that were insiders, so to speak, that were part of this coup attempt. Now the coup attempt failed. Now what's going to happen? This is going to cause somebody like Putin, who, you know, like him or hate him, Putin is the leader of Russia and a nation that feels threatened on their frontiers. Now, when we talk about Ukraine and what's going on in Ukraine, I mean, this is one war that we have had so many lies, so much deception that has come out of our media, particularly the media in this country. I mean, it's so hard to find out what the truth is, whether somebody's winning or losing. One of the things that's very clear is that the war in Ukraine is not going well. One of the things that I read today, Roger, and for your audience, is that now we're starting to hear some of the underpinnings of what Russia will now do if they start to receive fire from some of these missiles that have been provided to the Ukrainian military from the West, principally from the United States of America. And if they start firing from places around the country outside of what are defined as the limited objectives, which are the two eastern Donbasses and provinces and Crimea, then we're going to see the war escalate. We're going to see it escalate. And one of the things that I worry about, because we've talked about it, and I mentioned it just a little while ago, Biden's even talked about it, and Biden doesn't know which end is up. But when we talk about the use of nuclear weapons, and people go, they flippantly go, well, you know, tactical nuclear weapons, like it can be minimized because we call it tactical. The yield on a tactical nuclear weapon could potentially destroy half of Europe. I mean, in some cases, because of the capability and the ability of these weapons. So I'm concerned right now that we could move into a place if we don't find leaders, and I'm talking about world leaders, who can step in, stop the dying, and decide how is it we are going to end this conflict, because this conflict will not end well, and it will not end well for either the West, and this is principally Europe, but certainly we continue to pour resources in there, money and blood and treasure, and it's not going to end well for Russia either. One of the outcomes of having, you know, a different leader in Russia, one of the outcomes is that you may get somebody who is far worse than a Putin, right? You may get somebody who says, you know what, we're gonna take this one, and we're gonna go in, we're gonna kick these guys' butts, and we're gonna move on Europe, we're gonna move on Poland, we're gonna move on Hungary, we're gonna move on Estonia, we're gonna move on, you know, some of these other nations on the periphery of the Ukraine. So we need to now allow for cool heads to prevail. The problem is that when we look inside of our own nation and we look in the Oval Office, we do not have somebody who has all of their faculties, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't see it. I mean, maybe there's listeners among your audience that see it. I don't see it. And we definitely don't have a group of globalist leaders over in Europe. They all seem to want to continue to drive us to more and more war. Anytime a war is protracted, anytime in the history of warfare, the more protracted the war, the more resources are expended, and it's never good for those that have to expend those resources. And those resources are people in terms of blood, and treasure in terms of money, and the cost. So this thing has to end. We've got to stop the dying. We've got to figure out how to get the right leadership at the negotiating table, because and I mentioned this briefly, and I'll get off my soapbox here on this. There is a global alliance forming against the United States of America. It started as a has an economic alliance, and it's under the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South America, or South Africa. And then there are at least another, I'm aware of another 6 to 10 nations that are looking to join this BRICS economic, group of nations. And that global alliance, as it stands with just the BRICS nations, that's 47% of the global population. The other, these other nations that are considering joining, and I believe the Saudis are one of them, and the Turks are another. There are a couple of others. France is even considering it. We're getting into the realm of about 70 to 75% of the world's population that is allied potentially, economically for sure, and definitely militarily, because China and Russia have a strong, strong military relationship. Most people don't know that the Indians, India, the nation of India, has a very strong military relationship with Russia. Russia builds most of the India's naval capabilities. So this is not a good place for the United States of America to be. And we are still recovering from 20 years of wars that we lost, okay? We retreated from Afghanistan. The war in Iraq has not gone well, and it's still semi-ongoing. We are still, you know, fighting in Syria. So we're still in a place militarily where we have to recover, we have to rebuild, we have to re-strengthen our military. And our military knows, for those military listeners, our military knows that we've been struggling with recruiting, and we don't have the manpower in this country to stand up to a global alliance. If in fact we actually had to go to a world war type scenario, and last point for me is, I am not anti-war, Roger, and for your audience, but I am anti-stupid war. And when it comes to what we're facing, we are in a really stupid situation that is so easily recoverable, and but yet we don't have the right leaders running our country that can achieve that.
Again, folks, if you're just tuning in, this is the Roger Stone Show. You're listening on WABC Radio. You can listen on WABCRadio.com. You can download the show later for your friends. You can find us at 770 on the AM dial. But I strongly urge you to go get the WABC Radio app so you don't miss any of this great program. We are interviewing General Michael Flynn, the 24th National Security Advisor, retired Lieutenant General, and my friend. General Flynn, you made reference to the credible stories about a Chinese spying station in Cuba. President Biden has had nothing whatsoever to say about this, nor has any of his representatives from the military. And you have opined that this is just the opening gambit for what could ultimately be weapons pointed at the United States, grounded in Cuba. What do you think the appropriate response should be from the United States?
Yeah, well, to answer the direct question, the appropriate response should be, you know, not on my watch. OK, if I were the president of the United States, I would be calling Xi and I would tell him, look, Xi, not on my watch. Do not cross that line and do not, you know, go there. I mean, intelligence collection capabilities, listening sites and such, that's one thing. And those they exist. But when we start to talk about offensive military capabilities or the positioning of offensive naval platforms, like an offensive a naval ship, a naval submarine that has offensive capabilities. One of the things I want to make sure that your audience understands, and most people don't, under Barack Obama pretty much gave up the entirety of the Panama Canal to China. When you look at there's this is really an important piece of geography that everybody needs to understand. And if anybody's been following some of the great journalistic reporting by Michael Yan, who's been down in the Darien Gap, the number of Chinese that are crossing into Panama and coming up this way is, it was reported about a month ago. They were coming up at about 1,000 a day. But the Panama Canal is almost lock, stock, and owned by Chinese companies. Okay, and they're able to transit the Panama Canal, whereas in the past they had to go around the Arctic, or they had to go around the southern hemisphere of South America, and they had to go that way. Well, now they can go directly through the Panama Canal, And when, but when they're able to go through the Panama Canal, that cuts down so much time and so much in terms of resources, fuel, all the kinds of things that you can imagine if you had to shorten the trip between China and the Mediterranean, right? China and Europe, and that, and by using the Panama Canal. Well, we owned it right up until Barack Obama's just opened it up and gave it away. And so the ability, so the Panama Canal matters, because when we talk about Cuba, if we start to see, if we start to see offensive naval capabilities coming through the Panama Canal that are Chinese, right? Chinese naval ships coming through the Panama Canal, where, you know, and then routing themselves up into a Havana Harbor or something like that. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big, big deal. And it, and it's something that when I look at the sort of the strategic view of the world, and I look at how forces are aligning and how nations are aligning and how capabilities, meaning now I'm talking about, you know, carrier battle groups, submarines, aircraft, missiles, the kinds of offensive capabilities that we could find ourselves having to defend our nation from. I start looking at the big ticket issues like this, like how do you get stuff from point A to point B? So the Panama Canal, I've been paying attention to for the better part of a decade and a half, almost on a, in some cases on a daily basis. Now with this newest information coming in about the Chinese potentially using Cuba as a platform. I mean, again, back to what I said, not on my watch, not on our watch. And so we should be demanding of our leaders, what, you know, and the mainstream media, why aren't people talking about this? I mean, I'm glad that we're able to have this conversation on your show today. And this is the kind of stuff that we need to be talking about, because if the Chinese get a foothold in Cuba, then, because they already have a foothold in Africa, they actually have multiple footholds in Africa. They have a foothold in Algeria. They have a foothold in Egypt. They have a foothold in East Africa, in Djibouti. They have a foothold in the Gulf of Guinea off of Nigeria. I mean, the Chinese are expanding their footprint globally, and they see themselves as the 21st century, leader of the world. Okay, they are going to be the ones that are trying to drive us to a new economic system, you know, this global credit system that the Chinese currently use, which basically means, you know, at the end of the day, it means, well, if you needed to fill your truck up twice a month, you may not be able to do that. You may only be able to fill it up once a month because the government says, sorry, you've already been you've already gotten your allocation of fuel for the month. I mean, that's what communism does. That's what these people in our country are. There is a element in our country, this Democratic Socialist Party of America, this Marxist left, that is driving our country to a version of communism with American characteristics. And we have to have people running our country that understand this. The bureaucrats that are in there right now, many of them are. And I hate to use the phrase bought and paid for, because it's not totally true. But they are under this rubric of, particularly those in the federal government, they are, and when I say they, this infiltration has been going on in our government. This is one of the reasons why Barack Obama told Trump, don't hire this guy. And I'll get off my dime here, Roger. Had I been able to stay in that job, and there are, it's not, and I don't just blame the Barack Obama and his minions, because there were some in the Uniparty that were part of this, and that'll come out at another time. But had I been able to stay in that job, the Mueller investigation, Roger, would never have occurred. Never. Okay? And that's a time when I use the word never. It would have never occurred. We would have not had the Mueller investigation. And I want your listeners, and you and I have had this conversation before, that I want your listeners to understand that. That it shows you the egregiousness that Barack Obama perpetrated on the 5th of January, 2017, from his Oval Office, when they conspired and colluded, as far as I'm concerned, to basically undermine a duly elected president of the United States and get rid of one of his principal key staff members, you know, in the National Security Advisor of me, you know, where I had more than enough capability to serve in that job, having led one of the largest intelligence agencies in the world, and having risen to the top intelligence officer in the Department of Defense, and having served in some very, under the director of the National Intelligence. So I'll speak for myself in my qualities and capabilities, and they knew it. They knew it. Talk about knowing where the bodies are buried. I knew exactly. I know exactly where the money's at, and how it's spent, and how they do it, and frankly, how to break open some of these safes to get to this evidence, this classified stuff that's been classified for 20, 30, 40 years, and make sure that we expose who we are as a nation, and make sure that the people of our country now can feel a sense of ownership, because they have taken the ownership away from we the people, and they are pouring it into the federal bureaucracy, and that's not the way our Constitution nor our founders wanted it to be.
Well, unfortunately, we have to leave it there. General Michael Flynn, truly one of the finest Christian gentlemen and patriots it has ever been my honor to know. A fighter, a warrior, a guy who could have retired and just gone quiet, but who was out there on the front lines every single day, blowing the whistle on what's happening in America, blowing the whistle on what's happening around the world. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on The Roger Stone Show.
Larry Kudlow here. If you own a business with at least 5 employees, visit governmentaid.com today. The federal government has enacted the Employee Retention Credit Program, known as ERC, setting aside billions of dollars to reward small businesses affected by the pandemic. You could be eligible for a payroll refund up to $26,000 per W-2 employee. This is your money, and you must act now to claim your refund. You can receive massive refunds even if you receive PPP. This is not a loan, and you will receive cash refunds direct from the IRS. Visit governmentaid.com to consult with a dedicated ERC specialist that will help you navigate through this complex process and file on your behalf. With no upfront fees, billions of refunds already filed, and thousands of satisfied customers, visit governmentaid.com to see if you qualify today. That's governmentaid.com.